Warren. Right now it is time to bring in Jim Lynch. It's time for Cover Your Assets. Jim, of course, joins us on a weekly basis. He's an independent voice on Wall Street, the economy, sports, and many, many different other subjects as well. And we welcome him in. Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Good morning to you, to everybody. I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, can't complain. You know, we had some rain last night. It's been a nice, calm week after the week before where we had tornadoes and tropical storms. Now all we have is COVID-19 and the conventions have started. But thank God.
Oh, well, you can't win all of them.
I know. Thank God, though. You know, I kind of think that this year will be beneficial because conventions, you don't need to have 10,000 or 20,000 people show up at a convention and then get mad at one another when somebody doesn't get the nomination. We may have lucked into something here where maybe conventions will be slicker and more easily designed and more palatable and still get the campaigns off. I really believe that.
Yeah, you know, I do too. I thought the first night presentation was quite good. It was very well organized and integrated, and some excellent speakers. And I thought Bernie Sanders did a marvelous job in terms of basically ensuring as best he could the support of his followers to Joe Biden. And obviously Michelle Obama stole the show, as we would expect. She is quite a quite an orator, and the depth of her sincerity is quite interesting because she's a real person, and that's what we need these days. And someone who has some real interest in other people, as does Biden, but she really articulates it in a way that we can all understand. In any event, I thought it was well done, and very, very impressed with some of the young people, and actually, I guess just about everybody. Of course, some tough subjects had to be dealt with, and they were. I think they weren't beaten up, but they were dealt with pretty well. One of them being this thing with the post office. You know, folks, if you get a copy of the Constitution, there's some nice small additions out or whatever you have. You'll find that the post office is mentioned in the Constitution. It's a service provided by the government. You'll also notice that nowhere does it say it should make a profit. Rather, it should be a service. And that's akin to the U.S. Army, the Defense Department, the Environmental Agency. All of those factions of government are not set up to make money. They're set up to serve people, to serve our defense, etc. So, unfortunately, there's a lot of confusion over this because the president, for his own reasons, spouts a lot of things which are really not true. And we'll see what happens on, I believe, Monday. The Postmaster General is going to testify to the House committee. And as you probably have read, he's got tremendous conflicts of interest in that he owns companies that deal with the post office. He also has been a $2 million or so contributor to Trump. And basically, his actions were really very erratic and irrational and caused some problems that really didn't have to be. If you want to improve something, you don't use a crisis as the background, namely the pandemic, make everything worse.
One of the problems with the post office, Jim, and people forget this, the post office is not in financial difficulty. In business, and you know this, in business, healthcare plans, retirement options, in private business, as well as in public businesses, are not guaranteed into the future. You don't have to guarantee that you've got enough money to pay them now to pay in 20 years, okay? About 8 or 12 years ago, the rule was put on the post office and the post office only that they have to have enough money around to prove that they can pay when people retire 10, 15 years down the road. People don't understand that. That's one of the reasons why the Postal Service is always up against it. Now, is it a bad idea? No, that's not a bad idea. But you have to explain the difference between the post office and other organizations that take taxpayer dollars, that they are the only ones required to guarantee the that pensions. They have enough money to pay people into the future.
And plus, they're overseen by a bipartisan board of governors. Yeah. Such as it is. But
also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just, again, the constant fight against sort of turning information into just sound bites that then become spread round and round, you know, it just does a massive disservice to people's brain cells because it's like eating out of a vending machine. You can only your body needs certain things, and if you don't have it, then you can't think, and if you can't think, then you're sort of useless.
But the whole thing about the post office is that what this postmaster general has done has been totally disjointed, and has no support from within the post office in general, and everybody knows that there's certain factions in this country that want a private. The Postal Service to go private. I just think that would be the hugest mistake that we could ever make in the world. And I think that by the time the Senate hearings finish and everything like that, the mail drop boxes that have been locked up and moved will all be moved back in plenty of time for the election. And
by the way, some of those pictures were from 2017.
Yeah, but there's a lot of pictures that aren't from 2017. So don't give me that it's fake news.
No, I'm just saying that some of them one of the first ones that came out that got everybody torqued was these locked up post office boxes that were because people this happened to be in California were putting stuff in it they shouldn't. That's all from 2017. Yeah. I'm not making everything is apparently generality.
Yeah, but you just can't make light of the fact that even you speak to postal employees and they'll tell you that mail sorting machines are taken offline, all these other stupid things to make the post office look worse and to make it operate less efficiently. And as much as we joke about the post office, you know what? It is true.
It's one of the most viable through rain or slow.
It is one of the most viable forms. There's only one other operation that's better at delivering things than the United States Postal Service, and that's our military. Basically, plain and simple, the military gets things from point A to B, the best in the world, and the post office is second. So it's just that's just the way it is, whether people want to believe it or not.
Back to what you raised. In terms of there's always been a group or factions of people who want to take it private, the post office. They want to do that for their own profit. And in the process of taking it private for their own profit, they basically hurt the citizens that are meant to be served by the post office, namely all of those people throughout the country. It's really amazing. It's been said many times in the last week that, you know, the people who really, really need the post office are the people in the rural areas where there's no broadband and there's not really a lot of sophisticated information flow. And it's so ironic because this apparently, the rural area, there's a lot of Trump supporters. So it seems ironic that he's doing this. But I think that what we have here is a case of Mr. Trump wants to create disruption so he can try his authoritarian schemes in his attempt to get reelected. Now, it's not going to work before sworn. He's not really that clever about it. He's pretty outspoken. Example, he said, and it's been quoted a number of times by people, that, well, you know, he doesn't like this mail-in voting because it'll hurt him in the election. Well, I'm sorry. You know, that's the way it is, Johnny, and you can't do it whatever way you want. One final point on the post office. It's written that if you interfere with the mail, you could be subject to 5 years in prison.
You know, it's a federal offense, yeah. It's a federal offense.
So keep that very much in mind when this man testifies on Monday, because he's floating on. I'm talking to Postmaster General, and he's on very thin ice because he's basically disrupted the mails.
You know, and
keep. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you talk about turning something private, Jim, and seeing as you've been involved in the stock market, you know things go public, things are private, and everything like that. Just remember the last time the United States made a big decision to have private companies run prisons. Just look how that's turned out. It has turned out as to be an absolute disaster.
Right. Because it's turned into a profit center, not a rehabilitation.
There's a difference when something has to be a public service and then something is a private business. There's a big difference. And you just compare what happens with prisons to what can happen with the Postal Service.
I think it's very important to understand that prison industry, it just didn't happen out of the blue that somebody in the government decided, oh, good, let's get rid of the prison system. Give it to somebody else. It'll save us cost and Harry, and you know we won't have to worry about it. The government was solicited, lobbied with money and whatever else for the government to decide to do that. And the people who did these prisons, fine, the government didn't have to do it anymore, but. In doing it for a profit, they've made it terrible in terms of the people who were imprisoned. And, you know, the thing about when someone is imprisoned, okay, he did wrong and he should go, or he or she go there and so forth. But you don't exacerbate the person's difficulty in dealing with the law by treating him with cruel punishment, because he comes out, he or she, And they're on a greater path to violence or theft or whatever it is. But it's very important. That's a good thing you brought up, because, unfortunately, lobbyists reign supreme. There's a place called K Street in Washington, D.C., where the buildings are full of lobbyists who do nothing other than go to Congress and make presentations and say, you know, come on, this would be a good idea. Why don't we... Take the prisons off your books. You don't have to worry about it. Some company will do it. They'll make a few bucks, but you don't have to worry about it.
And by the way,
you're a nice fella, and you know, we're going to give you $50,000 in your PAC or in your campaign contribution. That's how it works.
And I can tell you that I know people that work in prisons. I know prison guards that have retired and still work there, and they're not paid nearly enough. They have to walk around these prisons without firearms. It's an extremely, extremely dangerous job, and these people are probably one of the most underpaid people in the world.
Underpaid, underappreciated, underserved. Question: how? When was this? It was in the 80s, right? The privatization occurred.
It was a big anti-crime bill, Bush. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
It was a thing done by both Democrats and Republicans, yeah.
And it seemed like a good idea at the time.
It's like Andrew. We used to have a representative, and he made a good point. Potato salad starts out as a great thing, but after time it goes bad. Well, every law starts off as a good idea, but it doesn't mean it stays a good idea.
Right, sometimes because it's not written properly,
yeah.
But very frequently it's because there are a lot of lawyers and self-interested people who manage to cut corners and get around things. And this is why in a democracy we should be very wary, which is why the Citizens United has been such a disaster in terms of all this money being thrown at the politicians. And, you know, they want to get reelected, and they have good jobs and good salaries and benefits. And so they say, okay, fine, let me have the money, and, you know, I'll look the other way, or I'll give you a break on something. the net result is you're not really getting 100% the performance that you want from these congresspeople in terms of creating legislation that really works for the American people, works for communities, and is helpful to the overall health of the country. The other thing that came up at the convention, which has obviously been out there, but there was a very, very telling, sad, but significant learning from a young lady whose dad passed away from the virus. And, you know, he was a healthy guy. He didn't have any problems. But as she said, at the end of his life, he said, you know, it's too bad I trusted Trump in terms of the virus and what he had been putting out. Oh, you don't need masks, or you don't need this, or you don't need that. I think we should all focus on the fact that the President of the United States has been out there saying things which have been basically untrue, shortchanging the danger of this virus and trying to make people do things they shouldn't be doing, like going back to work too soon, or this gentleman actually went to a karaoke place for a party because Trump had been putting out, oh, it's time to get back, and it wasn't. And we're seeing more and more the people who are the scientists are now having a little bit more courage, are pointing out that Trump really delayed dealing thoroughly with this for about 6 weeks. And so he's got a lot of deaths on his hands, and he should be judged accordingly in terms of this election. If a president cannot tell you the truth to maintain your health, well, he shouldn't be the president. And now the president is also out there talking about, first he was talking about hydrochloroside or something like that, which the FDA said not effective, maybe it gives you some heart problems. Now Trump is working with the MyPillow guy, an oily guy with a mustache. MyPillow is his business, and he was actually out at the Rose Garden, I guess, a month ago talking. Now this guy went through Carson, Ben Carson, and said, oh, Olandia, some kind of herb or something is great. Let's use that. Let's buy that. Well, apparently this thing is toxic, and it can kill you. Now, Trump is desperate to get his name on something that works to solve this virus. It's not going to happen. It's only going to happen with the scientists creating a vaccine or procedures or whatever. You can't pull something like this out of the air and say, oh, this will work. It's like, you know, have two hot chocolates and you're better for the next week and a half.
It's, you know, sitting here in Connecticut, a state which was per capita one of the worst infected states, not in actual numbers, but in per capita for the population. And now seeing that Connecticut has almost, not quite fully reopened, movie theaters and stuff like that are not open yet, but Connecticut has managed to take its curve and bring it down to where right now we are close to 1 million tests in Connecticut, okay? That's a tiny little state of Connecticut. And our testing rate is at 0.8%, which means less than 1% of the people tested are reporting COVID-19. Now, Connecticut has done an unbelievable job in reopening and managed to control it basically via face masks and trying to keep people socially apart and having restaurants have outside gathering areas for people to gather. And those are the things that the federal government misstepped on back 5.5 months ago. Those are the things, the simplest things in the world, which people still don't, a lot of people don't believe, that really work. Because all you have to do is look at the state of Connecticut and realize it works. Those things work. You know, we only have about 2.5 minutes left, but I just wanted to point that out, that those things actually work.
And it's something that people can do, so you feel like you've got some control over the whole thing. Wanted to ask Jim a totally different question.
Okay, we only have about 2 minutes.
Okay, but Jim, you are in New York and you are on the Upper West Side, correct?
Yes.
Okay, can you give us an actual on-site? I know that, and I checked with various people, but what's, I know that you had a population moved into some hotels around there, and I also know that I heard just recently that last night that's changing, and is that consistent with your reality of actually being there?
Yes. They were always there.
Right.
But the population has picked up. Also, a lot of these places have people who have some mental problems. They're not totally crazy, but, you know, they're dealing with issues. And what we have now is a lot of people are not getting their drugs either on time, or they're not taking them for some reason or another. And there are enough of them so that they're creating a disturbance and threats and so forth. Also, the amount of violence has picked up, not just from the mentally disabled, but there's an element in the city.
Frustration.
What happens when you lock people up?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said, Marshall said frustration, and I said, yeah, that's what happens when you lock people up.
Well, I guess you're right on that. But the thing is, we really have to do... Oh, by the way, let me... On the same score, let me say, Marshall has done a great service, as well as one of my friends who put something on Facebook about people being depressed and upset with this lockdown situation that you're referencing. The suicides have popped up quite a bit, and alcoholism and drug use has increased a lot.
Yep.
And Marshall pointed out, he gave the number of the suicide hotline, as did my friend Peter. And I said to my wife, it's interesting, at the end of 3-5 shows lately, I've been saying, well, you know, you have to keep your mind up, vital, and so forth. And I just want to point out to everybody, there is support for people who are overly depressed, uncomfortable, maybe getting a little out of sorts so that they get stupid in the street and they start yelling at somebody who's wearing a mask or not wearing a mask. But in terms of the neighborhood, unfortunately, a lot of people have been moving out, going somewhere else, and it's losing the vibrancy that it had. It's very interesting. I can't remember his name right now, but he was one of the stars of The Sopranos, Michael Imperioli.
Yep.
And he lives... He's been on the Upper West Side now for, I think, 20 years or more. And he was asked by his neighbors to please speak out about the difficulties going on. And he actually wrote a piece about what's going on. And he, of course, he's not going to leave the city. He's got faith that he'll come back. But he did point out that some of what you've just referenced, Jill, is getting more and more prevalent. And, you know, there's X amount of older people in all of these communities. They really feel very threatened by people coming up to them in the street and either badgering for money or actually pushing them or shoving them. So
we're out of time, Jim. We're out of time.
But you're our on-site reporter.
Come on.
We're right up against
I want my money back. My God.
We're right up against the clock here.
All right, hold that thought, just because it's great that you're there and we got to go.
Okay. Why did he? I'm sorry.
I said, it's great that you're there, and we got to go.
And it's great that you're there, and go ahead. Have a good show and a good week.
All right, take care, Jim.
Thanks.
Jim Lynch, and Cover Your Assets here on Robinhood Radio.